If you're interested in early retirement, you have to consider how you're going to afford life when a paycheck isn't hitting your bank account every other Friday. Of course, my favorite method is investing in the stock market. This provides dividend income and the ability to sell your stock when you need to. But there's another obvious answer out there. Real estate. I don't know how we've gone 135 episodes without extensively discussing investing in real estate. It may be because it isn't something I currently participate in, but it has my attention. When I think about my drawdown method, there is hesitation on what I would do if I felt like we were in a down market. And I'm wondering if real estate income would give me that much needed stability through my early FI years. So I'm putting in effort to learn about real estate. And if you do the same, there is one educator you will likely run into, Dustin Heiner. Dustin is the host of Master Passive Income and is on a quest to help 1 million people get started investing in real estate. He is, of course, a real estate investor himself, and at the age of 37, was able to quit his job because he had enough passive income from his real estate investments. In this episode, we discuss three common mistakes that Dustin wants you to know about before you buy your first property. Our goal with this conversation is to prevent you from making mistakes that Dustin had to learn the hard way early on. So if you're interested in real estate investing, let's get into it. I hope you enjoy my conversation with the father of five and successfully unemployed, Dustin Heiner. You know those moments where you think, I wish I would have learned this in school? Those are the topics that we love to talk about. Join me each week as I interview experts sharing their strategies for solving problems that us young adults will face throughout our 20s and 30s. So what are you waiting for? If you want new episodes about adulting advice every Monday, hit that follow button. Man, I have devoured your content over the last week or so. I always love getting to dive deep into a topic that I haven't really done a whole deep dive in before. And real estate's one of those. And I think partly just because it wasn't part of my financial independence strategy. But as I'm inching closer to financial independence, and I'm thinking through the income that I'm going to need to support myself and my expenses moving forward, real estate is on my mind, especially from a stableness and a steadiness, you know, the consistent rent checks that can come through. So I'm super stoked to have you on the podcast today so we can dive into this, Dustin. So thanks for making the time.
Absolutely. I'm super, well, number one, excited. You and I are friends now. We got to hang out quite a bit at a recent conference, which was a lot of fun. But talking to other podcasters is just a blast because you guys know how to hold a conversation just like I do. So it's great. Plus, I mean, I love the term successfully unemployed. So at 37 years old, I was blessed to be able to quit my job. And I like the term successfully unemployed because when I used the word retirement, when I retired at 37, everybody has different pictures of what words mean. And they were thought for retirement. Most of them sit around, watch TV and play golf all day. I'm like, don't worry, I can play a lot of golf, but I don't like sitting around. I'm a doer. I build businesses. I literally have five businesses now because I quit my job. 40 plus of my hours of my life back every single week that I can devote to building businesses to provide for my family and helping and serving people. But yeah, it's such a blessing to be able to come on podcasts and talk to great people like you, Justin.
Yeah, and our target audience is really looking to do that, probably relatively around the same age that you are. You know, they're in their 20s and they're looking at their mid to late 30s as creating work optionality, meaning like they're not going to retire from the concept of making money and working and sip pina coladas and play golf all day, but they want to get in more aligned passions and businesses and hobbies and spend their time there because we both know working corporate, you're working for somebody else and you're kind of fulfilling someone else's dream. And I love corporate from one perspective as it's an ends to a means or means to an end, meaning you can get a steady paycheck and you can build wealth on the side, but hopefully you are transferring that wealth into more passive income or generating income on the side. So you have this little employee that's working for you over here so you can start taking your time back.
Absolutely. And one thing that I've come to realize that as you're working a job, I love the acronym. It's J-O-B. It's an acronym for just over broke. And everybody realizes this, like your boss is only paying you enough money to keep you working without quitting, but not so much money it takes money out of their pocket. If they paid you what you're worth, they'd probably go broke, but you're living and working just over broke. Now, the sad thing too is we're all taught to go to school, get good grades, get those good grades, go to college or university and get in thousands and thousands of dollars into debt, and they get a piece of paper and then go hopefully find a career. Then work 40 plus years of your life and then retire 65, 70 years old and hopefully retire and live on 40% of what you managed to save your entire rest of your life. So it's just a plan that I found is not, it's not very fun. And especially the best years of your life are when you're younger. It seems like I'm not 65 yet. I'm not 70 yet. I just know you slow down a lot. Or I see a lot of people that are older, they slow down a lot. I want to have more fun when I'm younger. So that's why when I was 26 years old, I said, okay, in 10 years, I'm going to, it's not just a goal. It's a deadline. Like I'm burning the bridges as I go. If I don't have it by financial freedom, by the time I'm 37 years old, 36, 37 years old, I'm going to actually quit my job and whatever comes, I'm going to have to do it. So I was blessed at 37 years old to be able to quit my job because of the real estate. It literally makes money for me every single month in passive income. That's one thing I love is passively making money. But yeah, so for me, started at 26 years old, got the idea, then started investing. And then fast forward, it took me, I think 7 or 8 years, eventually had enough properties to quit my job. Then a couple more years because it's hard to give up that W-2. But with that, my students now, because I did all the wrong things, like it took me, I had to figure things out on my own. I have students now that are quitting their job in 3 and 4 years because they have to have fast track success because all the problems that all the thousands and thousands, tens of thousands of dollars I wasted doing it the wrong way, they don't have to go through that. So yeah, it's so amazing how real estate allows you to have freedom in your life. But then also it's one last thing, it's quickly a thought is it's generational wealth. Maybe people don't have children yet, but when you start having kids, it's a thought in your mind. How do I provide for them? Well, my food is paid for by my properties. The house is paid for by my properties, but then I'll literally give these properties to my kids.
That's really cool. Yeah, I'm so stoked because you're so passionate about real estate, and it makes me really excited as well. And one thing that you mentioned there, goal versus deadline. Oh man, without getting down a tangent, I know that's a big thread of yours too. You know, it's one thing to set goals, it's another thing to set deadlines. So let's get into it. Let's get into the heart of this conversation today, which is going to be centered around three common mistakes that first-time real estate investors make. And the number one that I learned from you was to stop worrying about finances and finding the home first, but instead, the first thing you should be doing or focusing on is building the business. So can you tell me what are two or three important processes to build out before purchasing your first home?
Oh yeah, absolutely. So, and this is something that everybody goes through. I even went through it. So it's not something that is really easy to grasp initially. Like you're like, man, but don't I need money? And don't I need the property? Well, yes, 100%. But here's the thing, really quick reason why you don't do this is I did this route. I found the property and I found the money. And then my property manager started stealing from me within 6 months. It was horrible because I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't hire the right people. And I don't want to manage the properties myself. So the key things about it is, and this is what I tell my students, because my students get excited because we invest all over the country. It doesn't have to be in your backyard, even the same city or state. We invest all over the country. Midwest is going really, really well right now. Down in the Carolinas and into Florida are really, really good. Now, what we do is we invest out of state. And with that out of state, we make sure that we hire experts to do the work for us. Now, when I say experts, who am I talking about? Property managers, contractors, plumbers, roofers, inspectors, insurance agents. Like, think of all the right people in the business to run the business because it's so easy. I'll kid you not. If you call up, Justin, if you call up any city or you find a city and you look up a realtor, just type in, let's say, I don't know, Des Moines, Iowa. Your realtor in Des Moines, Iowa. There's going to be a laundry, like thousands. Call any one of them. And they'll easily start sending you. They'll just put your name on a list and start sending you deals or properties. It's no work on their end. They just put your email address and send you things. They don't do a thing. There's so many realtors. So the first step that I suggested, well, the first problem is start looking for the properties first. That's not the right thing. The first step that you need to do is find a city that has good inventory And these are the properties that people want to rent or eventually buy. Cookie cutter type homes. For me, 3-bedroom, 2-bath, 1,200 to maybe 1,700 square feet. Not too small that families don't want to live there. Not too big that it's going to have extra walls to paint and extra toilets to fix and all that sort of stuff. You want a great cookie cutter type home. And with that, you also want to hire the experts in that city that you found. So you found a city, good inventory, meaning the properties that you want to rent, good price point that you could rent it for. My suggestion is $250 a month in passive income. Once you found that city with good inventory, then you will move on to building the business. Actually, let me give you a quick analogy of what this looks like. So if you're going to start a convenience store, you know, a convenience store, soda machines and candy bars and all the good stuff, well, you're not going to sign a lease on a location, open the doors, and set a box of candy bars in there on the ground. You're not going to do that. But what you are going to do is you're going to build the business first. That is getting the gondolas, those are shelving units that all the candy bars go on, the cold storage, the countertops, the cash registers, insurance, employees, bank accounts, everything in the business before you buy any inventory. Same thing with real estate investing. We build the entire business, get everybody working in the business, and then our property, that is our inventory. Like, I'm not going to live in these properties. In fact, 30 plus properties that I own now, I've only seen one of them before I bought them. All of them, I sight unseen. I don't even look at them other than through pictures. With that, I hire the experts. They're the ones. So first was inventory in a city. Find a good city, good inventory. Pausing that, then you move on. Well, I have experts in that city that are going to run the business for me, the right property managers, contractors, insurance agents, all these other things in the business. Then once you have that, then we move on to financing. Can we get the financing? And a lot of people quickly will jump into, well, Dustin, I don't have any money. Well, we can get past that. They might think, well, Dustin, I have bad credit. Well, we can get past that. In fact, I've literally done 15 different ways to get financing. Literally 15 different ways, not just a mortgage or hard money lending. There's so many different ways, but that's not that hard. We'll get past that. But the next thing, once we all have this inventory set, we have the experts that are hired, the right ones set, that's when we get the financing. And then once we have the financing set, that's when we start looking for properties. Because sadly, last thing I'll share is I usually get students, they'll get a lot of properties that they want to buy. And they say, hey, Dustin, I found a bunch of properties. I said, that's great. But who do you have to manage that? Who do you have to finance that? Who do you have to insure them? Like, who do you have to actually run the business? And they'll say no. And one more thing I have to add. I get people coming to me and say, they're already started investing. They say, Dustin, I did all everything those gurus tell me to do, and I can't find a property manager. And the reason why is because they didn't build the business first. Now, because what happens is in a city, there's a lot of bad areas and a lot of good areas. If you buy a house just because you saw it on, let's say, Zillow, and a realtor says, oh, this is going to be great for you, they don't care. They sell it and they're off to the next person. And then you try to find property managers. And then they say, you call a property manager, hey, property manager, I have this property. I'm looking to rent out. Would you manage it? And they say, no, I'll get shot there. Well, you no longer have an asset. It's a liability now. How much better is it if you would call property managers before you have the house and say, hey, property manager, I'm looking to buy this house. Would you manage it for me? And how much would it rent for? What's the vacancy factor? What are the clientele, like the tenants like? And they explain how much we could rent it for. They'll explain it all to you, or they'll say, I won't manage it. That helps you. That's expert information. So the biggest thing, building the business with that, making sure you have the right inventory and the right people in the business doing the work for you.
Definitely. And I love that thought. So to reiterate, it sounds like it's focusing on a city, next building the team. And you mentioned a few key players on that team, especially early on, like the property manager, and just getting their thoughts and opinions and if they would truly manage the property. Then you move to financing and explore the 15 options. And you've done episodes on that. So go check those out, and you can kind of explore the different options that Dustin can put out there for potential financing. And then you start identifying some houses and making some offers. So I love the breakdown there. One other thing that I really love around building the business too is setting business rules. So for example, I know one of your rules is you empower property managers. If the expense is less than $200, just take care of it. With me saying that, any other business rules that come to mind or a business rule you put in place that really worked out well for you?
Yeah, there are so many different business rules, and I like to call them systems, procedures, and processes. Now, these systems and procedures and processes that we put in our business, they're going to help to make sure that it's ran properly the way that we want them to run. So like a property manager, and let's say the example of, I trust a property manager, and I know that anything under $200, go ahead and fix it. You don't need to bother me with those. Well, I've had some property managers, no, I take that back. I've had some students were so worried about their property manager nickeling and diming them. Like there's always a $100 charge here, $180 charge here, like just below. And in the end, it just adds up. And so they even put it any charge, you talk to me. So we can work through that. That's not that big of a deal. We find the right property managers, they're going to take care of you. But on top of that, here's a big systems and procedures and process. Like here's a process that I give my property manager. So your property manager is your quarterback of your team. They're the ones that make you money, that protect your properties, that make sure you're getting the right people in there. They're going to do everything in the business for you. Just like in that convenience store analogy, you're not going to just grab somebody that's walking across the street and say, hey, you have a pulse. Come on in here, manage my money, manage my inventory, manage my customers, manage my employees, manage my business. You're not going to do that. You're going to hire them. You're going to interview them many times and then hire the best person for the job. People go into real estate investing thinking, oh, you're a property manager, go ahead and do it. No, no, no. We got to interview them. So with that, once we find the right property manager, that's a big deal, finding the right property manager. In fact, I have like 15, 14 different questions that my students are to ask their property managers so they get to know them, interviewing them, and the answers of what they should look for. Now, here's a process that I give my property managers. And I tell this to every single property manager. I say, I don't care how you manage other landlords or other owners' homes, how you manage them. This is how you manage my house. The rent is due on the first, it's laid after the third, and then once on the fourth hits, you put a 3-day notice on the door, and every city has, and different counties have different laws, but follow this general pattern. It's usually the same, similar, but you put a 3-day notice on day four. And as soon as that 3-day notice is up, you make sure, well, as soon as it's late fee, as soon as you put the 3-day notice, late fee, and the 3-day notice. But if they haven't paid the late fee and the rent, once that 3-day notice is up, the next day you literally file an eviction right away. We don't put up with some, oh my, and I've done this before because I learned my lesson the hard way. I've had people literally sob stories. Oh, my son got arrested for the 8th time this month. I had to pay all the money that I would normally give you for rent and I had to go, like, okay, I guess. We can't do that. In fact, what happens is you become a little more, it seems like you could be a little choosy on things, and it also can be backfiring because somebody might say, hey, you gave this to this person. How come you didn't give it to me if they find out? But in fact, what I found when I do it this way, it's the most non-discriminatory practice ever. Everybody is treated the exact same. And no matter what happens, just like if my mortgage doesn't get paid, my bank is not going to take a sob story. Oh, my son just got arrested for the 8th time. They're going to say, well, it's too bad. It's still due. So This is the type of thing that we put into our business to make sure that the people that we hire, and when I don't just say like a lot of the quote unquote like gurus or the people teach real estate, they'll say build a team. I don't talk about building a team. I talk about getting experts in my business. I don't have a team. I have a business and I have either contractors or employees running my business. And so they work for me. The kind of it's just a little nuance. But when I hear of the word team, and my students, when they talk to team or say the word team to a property manager, let's say, hey, property manager, I'm looking to build my team. Immediate red flag. Oh, this guy read a book or just went to one of these seminars and they're not going to work with you. No, what I do, here's how I call property managers. Hey, property manager, I'm an investor. I invest in this area. I'm looking for a new property manager. Tell me about your stuff. That's it. That's I'm a business owner and I address it as a team, or it's not a team, as a business. So Those are a couple of things of how we run this as a business, as opposed to just being a mom and pop landlord.
I think that's a fair nuanced distinction there, which I appreciate. And then your 15 questions to ask a property manager, do you have that anywhere? I didn't run across that. Do you have a guide or a podcast episode on that or anything?
I want to say I do. I've got like, I don't know, 300 or 400 episodes. No, it's 315, 16 now. I can't remember. I want to say it's somewhere in there, but it's definitely like I have my course that everybody goes through. It's called the Ultimate Real Estate Investing System, but I definitely have it in there with all the answers. I even had a blog post on it once I believe it's in there. I haven't touched it. And like, I wrote it back in like 2016, 2017. So it might be in there.
Okay. I'll send you a follow-up and we'll put it in the show notes if you're looking for that and Dustin ends up finding it. But I want to move on to the second mistake that I want to talk about, and that's not factoring expenses into your pricing model. And I definitely want to come back and circle around on your $250 rule. But setting that aside first, aside from mortgage payments, home insurance, property taxes, can you bullet out a couple of other common expenses? And then after you bullet them out, I'd love to double click on a few of those and ask you how you project some of those expenses.
Did you say double click on a podcast? That's awesome. I love it. I get it. I get it. Okay. So here's the fun thing about expenses. So I'll say this, and Justin, I know you and your listeners will get this really quickly. So even though we have expenses in our business, mortgage, taxes, insurance, here's a big thing that everybody needs to realize before I get into what they are. I don't pay my taxes on any of my properties. I don't pay my mortgage. I don't pay my property manager. I don't pay for repairs. I don't pay for insurance. I don't pay for any of that stuff. Like, I don't have to get a job to then pay for these things, because I know a lot of people say, Dustin, how do you afford a property manager? I say, well, I don't. I don't afford a property manager. I don't buy the property. Here's the big key. I don't buy the property unless all these expenses are paid for up front by the tenant. Not necessarily the tenant pays them. No, the money comes into me. I make a minimum of $250 a month in passive income, and then I pay out all those expenses from the rents that come in. And it'd be kind of like this. Let me give you a quick example of what that looks like. So let's say you had a candy bar business. You can buy a candy bar all day, every day. You could buy it for 50 cents. And you knew, without a shadow of a doubt, you could sell it for a dollar over and over again, and you could do it unlimited as much time as you want. Well, you would buy as many candy bars as you could for 50 cents and sell them for a dollar. You make a lot of money. Now, same thing with real estate investing. You could do that same thing, but you would not buy a candy bar for $2 if you could only sell it for a dollar. You would lose a dollar every single transaction. You would not. Why would you? You would not go into a business that loses you a dollar every single transaction. Well, instead of that, what we do is we make sure we make money every single month in passive income from these properties, accounting for all of the expenses. One quick side note too, the beautiful thing about real estate investing, let's say you didn't have that 50 cents, getting back to the candy bar analogy. Let's say you didn't even have that 50 cents, but it cost you 25 cents to borrow 50 cents. Well, then you're out of pocket 75 cents, and then you can sell it for a dollar. You still make 25 cents. You're like, how much money can I borrow? Let me borrow as much as I can. Same type of thing with real estate investing. We borrow other people's money to buy these properties. Now, here are the expenses that I always make sure that I account for. Mortgage, obviously, number one. Taxes, death and taxes, only two things for sure in life. So mortgage, taxes, insurance. Insurance is a big deal. You got to make sure you have good landlord insurance. Then you also have repairs. Now, repairs is kind of nebulous, or you just put a percentage. For me, I put 5% of the rent that I receive. Let's say you make it $1,000. 5% of that would go, and I would save that aside every month for repairs. Same thing with capital expenses, which is a different title for repairs. Basically, it'd be like a furnace, a big ticket item. The roof goes out. That's a capital expense. And so that's another 5%. So 10% out for total repairs and capital expenses. Those are the major ones that you got to look for. A couple other ones that I also make sure, if you have an HOA, homeowners association, you have to pay. That's expenses going out of your pocket. You don't need to necessarily do like the yard maintenance, all that sort of stuff, unless you have a short-term or midterm property, which you have to account for that. But another big one is vacancy factor. Excuse me. Vacancy factor is one. And what that means is, how often out of the entire year would it potentially not be rented? Half a month, a full month, whatever it might be. What I usually do to get that number is I'll ask two people. Remember, you build out your business, you get the right experts in the business, and these experts are going to know these numbers. Your realtors will know the number. It'll be a little skewed to realtors fudge the numbers. I've just found this.
Rose gold.
And if you're a realtor, they'll if you say, hey, I think I could rent it for $1,000. Oh, you could rent it for $18,000. Like, are you sure? they'd like to make it a little enticing for you. So what I do is I take like the realtor. I say, hey, realtor, what's the vacancy factor? Let's say they say it's 6% of the year. It'll not be rented. I say, okay, let me bump it up to 8%. But who is the best one? My property manager. They manage properties, very similar ones that, and so around the area, so that your house is, they'll know what type of vacancy factor. Those are the big main ones that if you don't account for those, you're going to be hurt. There are other ones, like if you did any marketing, but I have a property manager that takes care of that. Accounting, I pay my accountant. I don't really factor those in. You can, if you want to get very, very granular, you can get very, very granular. But those are the main big ones that I make sure is in there. But here's a big one. Here's one last expense you must have. In fact, if you don't put this in there, you're going to be screwing up. It's the expense of your profit. My profit is $250. It's a line item as an expense is $250. It's not like, let me calculate all expenses and then just whatever's left over I get. No, no, no. I make sure I don't buy it unless I'm making a minimum. Remember, this is a minimum of $250 a month. I have some that make me $500, $600, $700, $800 a month because, you know, you buy real estate and then wait. Over time, it goes up. You don't wait to buy real estate. You buy real estate and then wait. And so with that, that passive income eventually gets bigger and bigger and bigger, but that is an expense you must put in there as a line item so you know you're making that every single month.
That's important. Let's keep going down that path because that's what I had for number three. And I think something that many early real estate investors are fed through some of these gurus and coaches and YouTubers and things like that is investing for appreciation. Like, hey, like I can buy this house. You can cash flow it at you know, and make enough money to be paying for your mortgage, but you're going to make the money whenever you go around, whenever you go and sell that house. You bought it for 200, you're going to sell it for 250 in 3 years. You're going to make 50 grand. You just need to be paying for the mortgage up until that point. I know you hate that, and that's not a principle that you abide by, but instead you talk about this $250 rule. So, you know, why do you feel like that's important in this whole conversation?
The biggest thing that I realized, because I wanted financial freedom, and more than likely everybody listening, everybody, your audience, Justin, is wanting financial freedom. And financial freedom comes when you're making money or you're bringing in income every single month. If you don't bring in income, you're not going to be able to feed your family. You're not going to be able to put a roof over your heads. That is the biggest thing that I realized. And here's the fun thing. Interesting, I guess is a better way to say it. 2006, when I first started investing. 2008, everything crashed. Like, it was so bad. I was so worried. I was like, am I going to lose my shirt? Because I saw so many other, I would call them real estate investors. They were trying to invest in real estate. They were more like speculating, hoping things would appreciate. They went bankrupt, so many of them. But the funny thing is, interesting thing, better way to say it, I made more money in the crash. Here's the reason why. Sadly, people that owned a home, sadly, they would lose a home. They'd have to foreclose. Well, are they going to live on the streets? More than likely not. That brings the demand for rental properties higher because the supply is basically the same. Now, I might pick up a couple more properties that are now turned into rental properties, but the demand skyrockets. So rents go up. So I make money because I don't invest for appreciation. I only invest for passive income. Appreciation is like frosting on a cake. I'll eat it all day, every day, but it's not what I invest for. But here's the great thing. I make money whether the market goes up, market goes down, or the market goes sideways because I invest for passive income. And like I said, the properties I bought back in 2006, I still own them. I think I make like $600, $700, $800 a month in passive income. And here's another blessing. I even pay off my mortgages. And with that, I have even more cash flow coming in. Now, that's also untapped equity, which we could talk about too if we want to go down that route. That's untapped equity, meaning you have a house, let's say it's worth $200,000. Well, that's $200,000 you can use to buy more properties. Well, I do that as well. So I'll pay off the mortgage. And then if I want to refinance and pull the cash back out and buy another house, and that new house pays for that original mortgage and I make more money on top, I do that as well. So many different ways to get all this financing done. But that's the biggest thing that I see is that the passive income helps my family to eat, put a roof over our heads. And on top of that, all the appreciation is gravy. It's icing on the cake. Like if you're watching this on YouTube, I might not be able to see it, but I have four kids. I'm literally going to be giving these properties to my kids. That's one of the best things about this is after 30 plus years, if you just pay off your mortgage, you'll own them free and clear and you'll have so much money coming in.
Are you going to want them to continue being real estate investors, or would you be okay if they're like, Dad, I don't want to deal with this home. I'm selling it for what it's worth and I'm taking that money and doing what I want to do with it.
You know what's great too, to add to that? I now with 40 plus hours of my life back because become financially independent or successfully unemployed is what I like to call it. I now have 40 plus hours of my life back that I now build businesses. So I have five businesses that make me money. Real estate's one of them. And in these five businesses, I have just about anything that they would want to do. I have something that they would want to work in and be a part of and hopefully potentially own in the future. Because you can't give your business or you can't give your job to your kids, but you can give your business, you can give your properties. Now, whatever they want to do, I'm going to go ahead and say, you go right ahead. You just know that daddy lives pretty well because, like, I love Shaquille O'Neal said this when one of his kids came to him and said, hey, daddy, we're rich. He goes, no, we're not. I'm rich. You're not rich. And I'm like, yes, that's the way to look at it. But eventually, you know, Lord willing, in the end, we'll be able to bless our kids and give them all to them. If they want to sell them, they want to sell them. But what I love is we homeschool. Nope, let me take that back. I have the easy job of making money. My wife has a hard job of homeschooling the kids. With that homeschooling, part of it is teaching them. Like my daughter edits my podcast now. That's a part of the business that she runs. She edits the ChatGPT written articles on the blog. But I have these parts in my business that they can run in now and work in, which is just a blessing to have.
That's really cool. Yeah. Shaquille O'Neal is also just like a personal finance savvy guy. Like the things that he's done with his career and the horrifying stats that come out of people that are in the NFL or in NBA or some of these major league sports. And then, you know, they become bankrupt 3, 5, 10 years later. Shaquille O'Neal has done a pretty good job setting himself up for success. And as much as he doesn't want to admit it, he's setting his kids up probably for success as well.
100% agree. And there are a number of athletes in general. Actually, what it just comes down to financial understanding and education. Anybody can do it. It just, honestly, we're not taught any of this in schools. We're literally just taught to be a cog in a machine to keep the whatever, you know, economy, whatever you want to call it, going, which is not bad. I'm not saying that everybody needs to be successfully unemployed. In fact, 75% of the population probably should be employed. They love it. They don't want to have the all the weight and the burden on their shoulders. They don't want to have to worry about payroll. Like, oh, I completely get it. But there's probably majority of your audience is like us, where they're like, you know, there's probably a little more out there for us that we can work a little extra hard for and then get that financial education, but then put our money to work for us. That's one thing I just love. And you said this a little bit earlier, but every dollar is like a little soldier working for you. It's like a little worker, a little worker bee going out and making more money for you.
Yeah. Yeah. I definitely love to look at it that way. Dustin, as we're wrapping up this conversation, I want to ask you about your journey here because you're passionate about real estate and passive income in general for a particular reason. So do you mind bringing us back to the moment that you were having your fourth child, came back from paternity leave at your current company, and you got some pretty disappointing news?
Yeah, absolutely. So following the same path, just like everybody, we're all taught, like I said earlier, go to school, get good grades and all that good stuff, and then eventually get a career. Well, I got the most stable, secure job you could ever think of. I was working, doing technology in a local county government in California. Those are three things that are not going away: government, California, and technology. So with that, I got this most stable, secure job, but I'm working this job. And it's a sit-down desk job. It was a great job and all. But with that, I bought one rental property. And I thought, you know what? This was the easiest money I made because I got that check in the mail. It was $317. I was like, $317? I didn't do anything this month. And it made me money. I said, I need to be an investor. But the sad thing was, you know how life just starts getting in the way. I'm working a regular job. I have a couple other businesses at the same time. But my wife and I started having children. And then I took my eye off the ball, stopped investing. But yeah, so here's the quick story about how what really shoved me into real estate investing. Well, my wife had our fourth child. And after their child was born, I went on paternity leave. That's where the dad stays home with the mom, changes poopy diapers and all that good stuff. Well, I go on paternity leave. And then 2 weeks later, I come back. And I get back to work, and in that same week, I get back to work on a Friday at 3:30 in the afternoon. I get a call from my boss's secretary, like the top dog, and she says, Dustin, would you please come to the office? I said, sure. And I hung up the phone, and I thought for a second, why in the world are they calling me in the office? Like, this isn't normal. And I've seen plenty of movies. Friday at 3:30, getting called to the boss is not a good sign. But I immediately shook it off. There's no way I'd be getting laid off or anything. I do great work here. So I get up and I walk down the hallway to my boss's office. Now, his hallway isn't very long. In fact, it's kind of short. But every single step that I take, the hallway gets longer and longer and longer. And it feels like my feet become lead bricks because the weight of potentially losing my job is just crushing down on me. Well, I get down the hallway and I turn the corner and I see my boss's door. His door is closed and his secretary, super sweet, nice old lady, she says, "Dustin, would you please have a seat?" And she's kind of sheepishly grinning at me, kind of console me with her eyes because she knows everything about what's going on. I know nothing about what's going on. So I go and I take my seat and I sit there. I start thinking about my life and I'm realizing that all this plan I was taught, all this time I'm working towards having a career, if this gets taken away from me, did I just waste my life going down this path? And oh my goodness, we just had our fourth child. If I can't feed my family, does that make me a failure as a father? Does it make me a failure as a husband, as a man trying to provide for his family? Well, as I'm sitting there, my hands get all clammy, my forehead gets all sweaty because the nerves is just crushing me. Well, the door to my boss's office opens up and out walks a coworker of mine with a piece of paper in her hands. She is noticeably distraught. She's noticeably upset, not necessarily crying, but you can tell her world has been rocked. She passes by and my boss says, "Dustin, would you please come to the office?" I get up and I go into his office and I get laid off. And remember, this is the government. Nobody gets fired or laid off from the government, but I did. And the reason why I tell the story is because of lessons, two different lessons that I learned. So I take that piece of paper, go back to my office, and I sit down at my desk. And I realize two things. The first thing, I need to get another job. Like, I need to find a way to make money to be able to provide for my family. So praise the Lord, I found another job in the same county that another department wasn't having the same issues. So check, that was a huge relief. But then sitting in that desk, I realized the second thing was that anytime anybody would ask me a question, "Well, Dustin, what do you do?" We all get that question. I would reply with my job. I would say, "I work for technology, working for the county." Well, when we reply like that, we're projecting our value that we put on ourselves as coming from our jobs. My value now, I realize, doesn't come from my job. It comes from my God and from myself, from my family. So right then and there, I realized anytime anybody would ask me the question, I would now tell them I am an investor. It may so happen that 100% of my money comes from my job. That's now my part-time job. I'm a full-time investor. So quickly fast forward the story. Got a new job at the same, you know, county, different department. Started buying property after property after property. Not taking my eye off the ball. Eventually having 30 plus properties, $250 a month in passive income at the minimum coming in from all these properties. I realized even though I'm making $75,000 a year here, I'm losing money because of all the time that I'm giving over here. Last quick part of the story. I went to my new boss, good boss and all. I said, "Hey boss, I'm laying you off. Like, here's your layoff notice." We both laughed and he said, "Well, Dustin, what are you going to do?" And I said, "Well, I don't have to do anything. I own real estate that works for me and I make money without working." And the last part of the story, so if you remember that short hallway that got longer and longer and longer, my feet felt like lead bricks. Well, I would walk to and from my car to my job a mile and a half every single day for years because I was too frugal to pay for parking. Well, I felt like I was walking on clouds because I knew I would never, ever need another job again. And the reason why is I now have my value is not coming from my job. My value is now going into whatever I put in. So everybody listen to this, you need to realize that your boss is not paying you what you're worth. You will never be paid what you're worth. You're worth much more than that. In fact, you'll know this by your boss is paying you just enough to keep you working without quitting, but not so much money that it takes money out of their pocket. If they did pay you what you're worth, they would go broke. So my suggestion is to find a way to make passive income, a way to have financial freedom. Real estate investing is one amazing way. In fact, there's a quote, 90% of all millionaires are made through real estate investing. Now we know there's other ways to make money, but that's where we store our wealth and we make more money. So everybody listening, just realize that you're worth so much more than anybody can ever pay you. And as soon as you get 40 plus hours of your life back into your life that you can put to whatever you want, the sky's the limit for you.
I feel like that was a really, really good closing thought and story, Dustin. This has been a blast. I've really enjoyed, once again, researching you, having this conversation, getting to know you over the last 6 months. you have a course out there, actually a freebie course. So if people are looking for some guidance, they want some support and their journey of buying their first property, do you mind sharing a little bit about the course and where they can find it?
Love it. Yes, absolutely. So my goal in life, well, first goal was to quit my job at 37 years old. Praise the Lord, I did that. My new goal is to help 1 million people to invest in real estate. So absolutely want to give you my course literally for free. It'll show you how, well, I'll tell you where to get it and I'll explain it. So if you text the word rental to 33777, rental to 33777, I'll literally give it for free. Or you can go to masterpassiveincome.com/free course, rental to 33777. But I'll show you how to build the business, find a city anywhere in the country to invest in, building the business up, scaling the business to be able to get financial independent and quit your job. So you can find that there. You can also, I have my own podcast. It's usually a solo show called the Master Passive Income Podcast. Just me teaching, giving all this information out, because this is just another way for me to help 1 million people to invest in real estate. One quick last thing, YouTube, Master Passive Income as well. But I actually do not mind and enjoy getting DMs on Instagram. So you can follow me there. The Dustin Heiner, the Dustin Heiner. And no, Justin, I'm not that arrogant. It's the only handle I could come up with, but everything else was taken. But yeah, reach out to me on Instagram, follow me there. I'm giving away lots of more content on how to invest in real estate. I even make some fun skits that, like me talking to myself, it's kind of like different characters and stuff like that. But I just love seeing people to invest in real estate. And the last quick one was my Real Estate Wealth Builders Conference. So it's an annual conference every single year. This year it's in St. Louis. I don't know about when this is gonna air, but it's the conference this year is in March 14th through the 18th. In St. Louis, and then 2025, it's going to be April 10th. So be St. Louis as well. But it's go to rubcon.com, R-E-W-B-C-O-N, rubcon.com, which is the Real Estate Wealth Builders Conference. It's literally a no sales pitch conference, just me gathering all my friends who are other expert investors and all of our audiences together to help them to invest. But Justin, it's been a blast, man. You had amazing questions. I could tell you're an awesome podcast host.
I appreciate it, Dustin. And I'm glad you're having the conference in my hometown, St. Louis. So maybe I can get out there at some point in time.
Are you coming?
I just learned about it like last week. But let's talk off air on it.
Here's what we'll do. We'll talk about it, but I'll give you a ticket. We're friends. I'll give you a ticket. You come hang out with us. You'll be able to see what everything's all about. It'll be fun to have you.
That's awesome, Dustin. Well, I appreciate it. Once again, this is Dustin Heiner, Massive Passive Income. You can find him on all the channels. The Dustin Heiner on Instagram. I do love the skits. Dustin, man, it's been a pleasure.
Thanks, Justin. I appreciate you.
Thanks for listening to the episode. As always, I appreciate your kind words. If you want to leave us a rating and review on your podcast player right now, that would absolutely make my day. If you want to find episode show notes, our blog, and other great resources, head over to tsirpodcast.com. If you have follow-up questions, an idea for a future episode, or just want to say hi, we have a contact form on our website, and those messages go straight into my inbox, and I promise you, I will reply. But all right, guys, I really appreciate you tuning in. I love you all, and you're not alone. Let's keep making it through our struggles together. Mm-hmm.